Welcome to the Roots of Success podcast.
We've raised the bar.
Tap into the source of your success through real stories from real people.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
It's time to level up and get to the root of your success.
And now your host, Nate the Great Peterman.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Roots of Success podcast. I am your host, Nate the Great, coming at you. And today we have a very special guest. She's incredible. Her soul is so pure and straight magical. Ivana D. Maria, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for that amazing introduction.
Absolutely. Now, I'm glad we can really, you know, make some time for this. I know you're super busy with all that you got going on. And we were just chatting a little bit before the show about just some different topics that we're excited to definitely share with you and go over with the listeners and the viewers today. But first off, Ivana, you know, I always like the guests to, you know, do an overview of where they started, right? Basically their story. So for those that might not know about you or, you know, haven't heard, I would love for you to kind of give them a brief summary of where you're from and how you started.
Okay. Well, I was born in San Diego, actually. I was born in San Diego, but I never lived there. I lived in Mexico City. I grew up in Mexico City. And I come from a family of filmmakers, pretty much. Kind of across the board, media, communications, film, TV, from my great-great-grandfather. So I was kind of, you know, I grew up with all of this around me and going to my brother's sets when I was really little and volunteering as any sort of assistant they needed or intern or whatever, even like, you know, a tree, I'd be the tree. And so then when I was 15, I left Mexico City and I went to study abroad. I went to Switzerland.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought I was just going for a year. Mexico City is a very difficult place, to be honest, to grow up in. And so I wanted to get away from it and kind of explore the world and know what's out there. And so I was going for a year and then I never came back.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I stayed in Switzerland for 3 years. I graduated there high school and then I went to Boston for college. I was in Boston for 4 years at BU, Boston University. And I studied, actually, when I got there, I wanted to study finance and acting.
Okay.
And they told me I was insane. And they said, that doesn't exist. And I was like, no, it's fine. I'll do it. And they're like, no, it's not a thing. Like, you cannot possibly do it. So then I took 6 months off, the first 6 months, which was very weird. And I went to New York and I was working at Merrill Lynch during the day and then Stella Adler Acting School during the night. Okay. And so I was trying to basically prove to myself and to anyone that I could.
Yeah.
Bottom line, I couldn't. So then I went back to college and I studied finance and law. And then during the year, I would do acting school.
Okay.
So during the year, I was focused on my, you know, undergrad. And then during summers, I would do acting school, whether it was New York or LA. Graduated, moved to LA full time to pursue acting. That was the plan.
Yeah.
And when I got here, I very quickly hated it. I hated the way things worked. I hated the concept of acting here because there's so, right, everyone in LA wants to be an actor. Everyone and their sisters and mothers and cousins, everyone wants to be an actor. And so the thing is, instead of it being, you know, motivational and being solidarity and, you know, we're all together in this, it becomes really depressing. Because the credibility of actors in LA is really bad. And not only that, but, you know, you go to an audition and you see 25 people that look like you. And it's just, it's really tough. And then I had a moment when I said, you know, they kept telling me, you need an acting reel. And I was like, what? How is that possible? Like, how do I get a reel if I haven't worked? But I can't work until I get a reel. So how does this make any sense?
Yeah.
And so I kind of had a moment where I looked around and I was like, wait a minute, we have phones that record, you know, now 4K, but maybe not then, but still really good, HD. You have free distribution channels online.
Yeah.
Why am I waiting for somebody to give me a role? Mm. And so I decided, I started writing about a character that I wanted to portray, then a story around it, and then I decided to produce a short film. So I wrote, produced, and acted in a short film, which became my reel. And then the short film did really well and I learned so much throughout the process. And then I decided to do another one right after.
Yeah.
And so I did another short film and it did really good. And And suddenly I was like, okay, I can't continue to do short films because they make no money. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much passion projects, but I learned a lot from them. So they were the best film school, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I had no more money for any of these passion projects. So then I couldn't go back to only acting. Once I realized that creating your own content was in the tip of your hands. I mean, we have everything out there. So I couldn't just sit down and now wait for somebody to call me. And so I continued wanting to write, produce, act, you know, somehow. And so I kind of went on this journey of finding stories. I was like, I want to find more stories to do. I want to do all of it. You know, sometimes I'll act, sometimes I'll produce, but I always want to have at least one project where I'm doing all of it. And I did, I kind of did that. I started meeting with people, and this was actually a life-changing thing for me, this mindset switch, when suddenly I wasn't very comfortable with just sitting and talking to strangers.
Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't that person. In LA, people are overly nice sometimes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I was very East Coast in that regard. I didn't like that much. And people actually always, when I was little, said that they always thought I was really mean before they knew me, And then they would get to know me and they'd be like, oh my God, you're so nice.
Yeah.
But because I'm not your typical smiling everyday person.
Yeah.
And so I decided that I would just change my mindset and that I had to be meeting with people in LA. It was the only way.
Yeah.
So anytime somebody would say, you should meet with this person, or, oh, you know, you would really like this person, or you have a lot in common, I would immediately send an email, connect, and be like, hey, can we meet for a coffee?
You would do it, yeah.
And funny enough, people were kind of shocked because we would meet for no specific purpose.
Mm.
And I started realizing how rare that was. Very few people actually meet for the sake of meeting.
Right.
Everyone, it's always like because of a meeting, because of a project, because of whatever. Yeah,
business. Or,
no one meets just because, why not meet someone new?
Yeah.
And I started making time for that. And not only that, but purposely saying yes to any meeting. And through those meetings, the most beautiful things happened. And one of those meetings got me involved in a project that is a true story, based on an Italian journalist. Her name is Oriana Fallaci.
Okay.
She's not alive anymore, but she was an amazing woman and an amazing journalist. And I started developing this story with this person who I met in one of these meetings.
Yeah.
Turns out, I mean, this is like really kind of in a nutshell, but we ended up pitching it to HBO.
Oh, yeah.
And they bought it.
Wow.
Like a week later.
A week, that's it?
It was really crazy because I had no agent, no manager. We went in there, just her and I, and we had a good story and we knew how to tell it, and that was enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that moment, I was like, wait a minute. Because everyone around me was saying, you know, oh, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that doesn't happen. But I was like, but it did.
It did happen, yeah.
So something must be changing and something must be different now. And so I realized the value of stories and how it became the new currency.
Wow.
You know, when the new digital platform started coming along, there was no longer the issue of distribution. And so suddenly it wasn't a matter of, oh, is it going to sell? Is it going to this? Is it going to that? It was more so, we need good stories because now everyone can show stories. So now we need to tell the best stories.
Yeah.
And so now the stories became the priority, which is amazing for everyone.
Definitely.
And so I decided I would stop my search for the manager, the agent, the this, the that. And I basically started looking for stories.
Stories, yeah. That's incredible. Because whenever you think about it, like social media, Instagram, stories.
Oh, don't even get me started on that. It drives me insane because let me tell you, I mean, when I was like, okay, I'm gonna find the next best story.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, okay, true stories to me have even an added value, right? Because they're immediately relatable. Because they're possible, they're attainable. So they have this like social responsibility element of it. And also, and I don't think enough people realize this, but you know, when you're developing a story or you're trying to sell a story, there's a lot of rules that need to be followed. You need a female protagonist. You need this. Oh, that is not politically correct. Oh, you can't say this. But if it's a true story, you're like, it happened.
Right.
It happened. What am I? And they're like, okay, it happened. So we can say it. So there's this beautiful thing that happens with true story content where it's like protected by this invisible veil of something. And so I wanted more true stories. And I kept thinking, I was like, where is there like a database of true stories, right? Yeah. It sounds so simple, but there wasn't. And the more I started thinking, okay, what would this look like if it existed? Everything pointed in the direction of social media, everything. A platform that connects people in seconds, that has the ability to share, that everything about it.
Everything, yeah.
But yet, empathy is at an all-time low. We've never been more disconnected. Social media has created a number of mental health issues that are just getting worse and worse. And so I was like, where did we go wrong? Because the essence, the technology behind these platforms could have been great for society, but they are not. And so I wanted to kind of reverse engineer and create a platform that would be good for mental health and that would promote truth. And the that would actually be true to the definition of the word story. Because I can't tell you the amount of times that I talk to especially younger people and I say, yeah, you know, story place is about sharing stories. And they say, oh, so do they disappear in 24 hours? And I'm like, what? Like, that is your definition. But, you know, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. So anyway, all of that to say that I decided to create Story Place, which is an app and it's a social media platform. And it's kind of designed and based on being a safe space that promotes empathy and truth and connects people based on real life experiences and what makes us human. And not this like unattainable truth that social media creates. So that's how I ended up becoming a tech person, but that wasn't the plan.
No, I love that. You know, something else that stood out to me, Ivana, was whenever you were talking about, you know, the meetings that you had with people and there was like no necessarily like purpose or I guess like intention behind it, and that they just kind of happen, because we live in a world nowadays where people, they want to meet more or less if they're going to get something out of it.
Yeah.
Right. And I find that very similar with like me as well, with some of the meetings that I have with people. And just, I mean, with this podcast, for example, like, of course it's a platform. It's great to have on social media and leverage eventually, you know, it's going to be a TV show and things, but, like I enjoy doing this and, you know, my intention and purpose is always to develop like super deep relationships with people, because as you're well aware, I mean, that, then I'm sure you can attest this big time, like the relationships that you've cultivated over these past like years and of what you do. I mean, with having no purpose, no necessarily intention behind it, but just kind of, I like to call it just flowing, you know, flowing through a conversation. Not necessarily preparing. I never prepare for a podcast. I never have questions that I'm going to like ask, like, okay, Ivana, these are all the questions we're going to go through. Like, I didn't show you anything because it's like, it's organic and you flow with that. And then people get a chance to see like your true colors, who you are, and it's more organic. So yeah, I love how you hit on that, because I think the viewers and even the listeners, they really need to digest that.
Yeah.
Just go into things like being yourself. Of course, you can still have something in mind of, I guess, like a little objective behind it.
Yeah.
But I love how you mentioned that with the organicness, because I can relate to that a ton, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, your objective can be to meet someone new, or your objective can be to learn something new, which I think should be everyone's. But you know, it's just, there's, you know, there's this quote, like, I never want to be the smartest person in the room, because then I'm in the wrong room. And I think that especially in this city, a lot of people focus on being the smartest person in the room and don't realize that that is just holding you back from self-growth.
Yeah.
And I think that honesty and you know, being genuine and being just real goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that there's this constant fear of being real, because it's kind of become a synonym for vulnerability, and vulnerability has become a synonym of weakness, which is so wrong, because it, you know, it's part of what makes us human. It's part of what we need to create more empathy. And so I can genuinely say that that my life changed a lot, and things started happening for me when I started being open to meeting people for the sake of meeting, not only open, actively meeting people just for the sake of meeting them. My friends used to joke that I was the busiest unemployed they've ever met. It was true, because you were like, can we grab a coffee? And I was like, no, like in 2 weeks. And they're like, what do you have to do? I was like, well, I have meeting, I have lunches, I have breakfast, I have a coffee. And amazing things came from that. So I think it's a very underestimated aspect of just life, you know. Don't wait until you have nothing else to do in order to meet with someone. Make the time. You know, everyone is busy, hopefully, but you make the time for the things that you care about, you know. And that has been for me my biggest strength, I think, now.
Yeah, definitely. You're a connector, you know, like you love to connect with people and just, you know, be in the moment. And like for me, like that's so inspiring, because I like to do the same thing, like just meet with people. But, you know, with my time coming to Los Angeles, like I've had moments where like I crave my alone time significantly. And that's where I thrive, is being alone in a space, but also having that balance. You know, like I thrive whenever I do this, because I love connecting with people on that deep level. So it's, yeah, it's intriguing, but that's inspiring for me. Definitely.
I'm glad. I mean, I really wasn't like this.
I mean, East Coast kid.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't into meeting people. I didn't have any interest in it, or I thought I didn't have anything to gain from it. Maybe, I don't know. But the point is, when you come at it, you know, and people will respond. Some people are shocked, you know, but people respond really great to just meeting. And it's much, you know, you shouldn't wait to meet somebody when you need them.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I mean, it makes it, first of all, the likeliness of that person helping you are much less.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, networking wise, it's just a fact. And also, it just shouldn't be that way, you know. And also, the biggest lessons come from the people you least expect it.
That's so true.
So, yeah. I'm all about that.
Mm. Yeah, I was having a discussion earlier with my guy. His name's Bobby Castro, really amazing businessman. He's done some significant things. And he was saying, he's like, you know, Nate, he's got some high energy, Bobby. He's like, you know, I never want to surround myself around somebody that has all the answers. Because for someone that has all the answers, like, it's just based off of his experience, he found out that it's not even, like, it's not true. You can't have
nobody
all
has
answers,
all the answers. And know? The problem is that that person probably thinks they do, and therefore, yeah.
Exactly.
I agree. Yeah. And nobody has all the answers, because there aren't ever all the answers.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean,
yeah.
It's, yeah, like, I agree.
I'd rather be around somebody that has, like, 50% or 40% of the answers. And then, you know, I was also touching base on the chat we were having earlier. I said, it's so crazy, because a lot of people don't feel worthy based off of the experiences, their stories that they've, you know, that they have, and the wisdom that they've achieved. They don't feel worthy enough to share it around people that are super successful status-wise, because they feel they're not, like, good enough.
I agree. I think that one of the biggest obstacles I've encountered with story plays has been getting people to be comfortable sharing their story, and not only comfortable, but to understand that they have a story, that they are a story. People don't realize that. And the thing is, you know, somebody's tragedy is another person's lesson. So if your mistakes can in any way, you know, help someone else, then they're worth it. You know, you're making it a little bit worth it. So why not? So, I mean, especially after story plays happened, I didn't stop producing. I'm still producing and all that. But I really focused on spreading this message of stories. Like, let's not lose touch with stories. Let's share more truth. Let's be more interested in other people's stories. And I think that that's really the way to get to a world of empathy, which I think is what we need the absolute most in every sense of the word, economically, politically, environmentally. We need empathy in the world. So I think that the best way, you know, is separating listening from agreeing and learning to listen to someone and understanding that, you know, I really think that if you take two people's stories and you break them down to its bare bones, its essence, more likely than not, they will have a common denominator, because most human beings are just, they function based on the same values, no matter our differences. Our differences come afterwards, but the essence of them are common values. And so when you realize that, that's where empathy exists. It's not about agreeing with this part of their story. It's just about understanding that it comes from a place that is valid and therefore respected. That's it. You don't need to agree and hug and everyone love each other. It's just a matter of respecting each other.
Yeah.
And so, I recently, I don't know, I love whenever somebody tells me, you know, that they work with a specific topic or they have an organization about something or they have a story, I always make it a point to have a meeting with them. And just, and a meeting means not even a business thing, just talking to them. Yeah. Recently I had a very, really interesting story being shared with me. I started, you know, on the app, we have certain topics that we talk about every month, every week, blah, blah. We're like, hey, share about this. And one of the topics that I really wanted to share about, what wanted people to share about is incarceration. I just think that I don't know. I guess my own curiosity. I don't know enough about stories about it. And I wanted to know more about it. And so I started, you know, reaching out to people with organizations and things like that. And I ended up meeting this man who was sentenced to life in prison. And for a first time, like minor offense, you know. And then, you know, when the law changed and all that, and life in prison was no longer a thing, but there wasn't like a reversal thing for it, for the people that were already there. So anyway, he ended up sending a letter to Obama, who then 2 years later ended up reducing his sentence. And now he's out. And I met with him. And he started telling me his story. And he was a little bit like, you know, clearly shy about it, or, you know, and he was telling me the story and he said, yeah, you know, I was selling drugs and he felt ashamed of this. And he said, you know, I know it sounds stupid, but I just wanted to be like my brother. And when he said this, I was like, please just hold on to that thought. I was like, don't ever think that that is stupid. That is the most important element of your story, because I can't relate to selling drugs. I can't relate to his upbringing. I can't relate to a lot of things, but I can relate to wanting to be like your brother.
Yeah.
I have brothers who I look up to who, I'm doing what they do.
Yeah.
Of course I can relate. And suddenly his story that felt so far away from me became very relatable. And so I think that one of the most important things is getting people to understand that, how to own their stories and how to, you know, change the narrative of them and understand that that's a story about resilience and a story about family and a story about love. It's not a story about crime. And so that's kind of where my recent passion, as you can see, is.
I love that, because it's like you're owning your and. You know, you meet a lot of people like that. They feel kind of ashamed of what it is that they've been through. And even myself, like I've went through that. You know, I've went through not necessarily sharing things. Like a hard topic that was so hard for me to share about it for the longest time was like my parents getting divorced at like a young age. Because I was 16 and that always hit me significantly. And now I have another story I can literally share. Like I was literally 24 hours from getting evicted from my apartment just because we had a hit in the business, you know? And those are the moments that people are like, wow, I can relate to that. But then I'm grateful for that moment, because now, you know, almost getting evicted, I'm going to get that laminated, right? And I have it laminated. So whenever I'm speaking on stage, it's like, I can attest to that now.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful, because like you said, I mean, everybody has a story.
Everyone.
And especially like Let me call out the men here, okay? Because I know we like to be tough. I know we like to kind of, you know, hold on a front and things.
Yeah.
But just know, like, it's okay to come out and explain, like, what it is you're going through. It's okay to have feelings.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you just said that. You know? I am so glad you just said that, because let me tell you, that Story Plays is 89% women. And I've been like really trying to figure out what is happening. And one of the things that I realized the most is that, well, one, I mean, there's a whole thing, but men don't share. Mm-hmm. They don't share with their friends. They don't share with their people around them. It's very strange, but you know, this whole thing of, oh, women talk a lot and they go to the bathroom together and they talk and they do this and they go to coffees. And I started talking to a lot of men around me because, you know, from my brothers, my boyfriend, my friends, I have a lot of guy friends. Absolutely. And I started talking to them and I was like, do you guys like share things with friends, or do you have like a WhatsApp group, or do you, I don't know, who do you talk to? And they don't, because first of all, especially in Latin cultures, but also in all over the world, mm-hmm. it's considered a weakness. Any sort of vulnerability is considered a weakness.
It's true.
And that's terrible. Because then you have, you know, I was working with Movember, the Movember Foundation, and they have a lot of data on this. And one of the things that he said was, every minute globally, one man commits suicide. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, the numbers for men are much, much higher than women. And when you really start to think about it, it's not very surprising, because it's like, you know, mental health doesn't discriminate.
It's true.
It's the same for men, for women, for everyone.
Absolutely.
And then you have this whole thing of, you know, Esther Perel has mm-hmm. some great data also on this and on masculinity and the issues behind it. But, you know, she said in one talk that I heard her, she said, women are born women. Men need to become men. And that is so true. And you have this constant thing of be a man, you know, man up. Right. What, like... how does that equal don't feel, what does that even mean?
Right.
And so you have all these things, and especially now with the whole women empowerment movement, which there's a lot of things I agree with, a lot of things I don't about it. And one of the things is that, you know, there's all this thing of like, oh, men are evil kind of thing in some of them. And I really think that it's becoming very difficult for them as well, because men are feeling even more insecure. You know what I mean?
So
and then you have like couples who, oh, now the woman works and the man works, but maybe she makes more than you. And so now you don't feel man enough. So it's like all these things where it's very important for men to be sharing their stories. It's very important for them to understand that it's okay. It doesn't make you less of a man to feel or to have issues or to have anxiety, or it's just human.
Mm.
And so more and more I keep saying, you know, it's just human beings. Like, whenever we stop having these conversations and we just consider people human beings, I think we'll be in a great place. Instead of women conferences, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, human beings all together. Like, we're all part of the conversation.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think there's so much work to be done there.
Absolutely.
And I really hope that more men come to Story Place.
For real. Because that's the thing. I mean, it's okay to cry.
Yeah.
Like, it's all right if you're going through it. I mean.
Exactly.
Shoot, I was crying yesterday, for real. I just had a moment for like 5 minutes. I just broke down in my kitchen. I got a really great friend of mine, and she, like, you know, cares a lot, and she gives me like advice and stuff. And I was just so grateful for that. And I just started breaking down, because I was just like, wow.
But that's human.
Somebody that cares. Yeah.
Exactly. That's human. And I think, I really hope that, you know, this changes, this mentality changes, because it's very damaging.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, very damaging. And I think that even gender equality overall is difficult to achieve unless it applies also to things like emotions and mental health. I think it's a big part of it.
Yeah, because when you hold all that in, it's like you're holding in all the, whether it's anger, all these
everything.
Negative emotions. And it's like you have a voice for a reason.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not like we're silent. It's just using sign language, or... you know, where we can't necessarily just, like, we have a voice, you have to use it.
Exactly.
And if you're like, well, I'm too shy, or I'm too, you know, well, get around somebody that will understand you. And if you have a hard time, I guess, finding them, I mean, I guess that's a good question, you know, Ivana, like, what would be a great way for somebody to connect with people that want to hear or about their stories or just connect with people in general?
I mean, that's the whole purpose behind StoryPlace. Mm-hmm. StoryPlace Social, I mean, there's StoryPlace Social and now there's StoryPlace Studio. But StoryPlace Social is about creating a safe space where people can go there, read stories or write stories. Or, you know, a lot of people that didn't want to share a story and then they're like, okay, I shared a story. And then they start seeing all the comments on their stories and they're like, oh my God. And they can't believe their responses. It's amazing. And most people are surprised. You can use a pen name on StoryPlace, so you don't even need to put your real name. Whatever outlet you can find, but you need to express yourself. And, you know, I hope that StoryPlace helps in that way. I know it has improved. Like, after Movember, we went from 92% women to 89%. Wow. It's moving.
2%, okay.
I'm like, it's something. But hopefully it'll get better, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, especially whenever more men, of course, can come on that platform and then just... again, participate and be a part of that. It's like having that tribe in a way that you can come to every single day. Because I'm a firm believer, whether you call it a mastermind group, a community, a tribe, you know, a story place, you know, whatever it is that you come together in, it's like there's perfect harmony in that.
Exactly. There's a dad from the UK that started sharing after Movember. I don't know who he is, but... he started sharing stories on StoryPlace about the difficulties of being a dad. And I thought it was amazing. So I hope more of those stories come out.
Absolutely. Now, you know, it's intriguing, Ivana. I'd love to hear a little bit more perspective-wise, like, of course, with you being in the acting industry. You know, I know I'm sure it can be cutthroat out here. How important would you say staying true to your image is? And I guess, like, not just staying true to your image, but like, what is it in terms of that heart? Because I know it's difficult. Like, a lot of people, they come out here, they come out to LA and they're like, oh, I want to be an actor, I want to be a music artist, you know, I want to do this and that. But I feel like people just kind of fold after so many months or after a year, and they don't necessarily give it enough time.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that if you're not sure if you want or you don't want to pursue this, I think LA will make sure that you are, that you decide really quickly. Because it is so tough that you need to love it. I mean, people think of acting as this glamorous thing. It is one of the most difficult lifestyles because it is pure instability, financial instability. One day you have a huge paycheck and then for 6 months, nobody wants you. Like, financial instability, physical instability, because you're moving around wherever they need you, whenever they need you. Mm-hmm. Emotional instability as well. I mean, in every sense of the word, it's unstable. And also, you are basically kind of puppeteered in a way, unless if you're not, you know, creating your content. Because, I mean, it is just how it is. And so I think that it's incredibly important to stay true to yourself, more than anything, because I think that if you don't, maybe you'll, you know, please some people here and there, you'll be happy, you'll make someone happy here and there, some things will maybe happen for you, for, you know, sacrificing your integrity or whatnot. But I think that in the long run, you'll be unhappy. And I think that, you know, one of the most important questions I think people need to ask themselves, whatever they're doing, is what does success mean to you? Because, you know, there's this constant kind of like, you can be kind of sacrificing everything because it'll be worth it, or, you know, fighting hard or working hard or doing this or doing that or not seeing your family or all of these things because it'll be worth it. But if you haven't defined what this it'll be worth it means, then you're just constantly rushing to this place that has no destination. So therefore you will never get there because it doesn't exist, because you haven't actually stopped and said, what is that place that I'm trying to get to? Because if you don't know what it is, you might pass it, you might never reach it because it doesn't exist. So I think that it's incredibly important to know where you want to be, where you want to go. What does success mean to you? Does that mean, you know, success in I don't know, at the end of the week? You can, some people, you know, define success in short periods of time. Some people define success in a 5-year thing. I don't know. But I think that defining success and staying true to yourself are two essential ways of ensuring that you are happy. Mm. And I don't, I personally don't see the point in being incredibly busy but unhappy. You know, what, that's very personal, but I don't think it's the right way to do it.
I know what you mean. Yeah, because it's like you'll do it for so long, but then it's just, it wears out after a while. And then that's why you see so many people, like, they pursue something, they're not necessarily passionate about it. And since they're not passionate about it, it's like,
and it's not even like it's a comfortable path. Like, you're pursuing something that is incredibly difficult, that requires a very unstable life, and you're unhappy.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
For real, I mean, what else do you
then
want?
Then why are you doing this to yourself, you yeah. know? So that's why I think it's very important to stay true to yourself. I mean, I think that no role, no acting role is worth you being unhappy with who you are.
Right.
It's just not worth it. And I know that from an outsider perspective, it might not seem that way, but it truly is. And it doesn't even apply to acting. It applies to anything. Yeah. I mean, no money in the world will, you know, fix your unhappiness yeah. if you're just not happy with yourself inside. So
it's true. It's like they say, more money, more problems, right?
Yeah.
Like, straight up. I'm curious about this one. So of course, with us being in a very big social media world, let's say somebody that, I don't know, you know, they want to get in the acting industry and they have a brand compared to somebody that might not necessarily have like a huge brand. Is there more, I guess, like benefits to already having a brand established already, like, you know, on an Instagram or on like a social platform? Do they look at things like that or not so much?
They do. Unfortunately, they do. And fortunately, they do. Okay. There's like two sides to it, I think. The fortunate part, I think, is that you have a PR outlet in your hands mm-hmm. and for free.
Okay.
And so you really get to design the image and brand that you want, and you can showcase your talent. You can record videos and upload them. You can do all sorts of things. The reason why I say unfortunately is because I think that a lot of people misuse social media, and therefore it becomes unfortunate that the number of followers will define anything.
Yes.
It shouldn't. Yeah. It really shouldn't, because one, I mean, come on, a lot of people buy them. And yeah. second of all, because it really doesn't say much about what you, I mean, what can I say? It's a fact. If you, you know, if I upload a picture, a selfie in a bathing suit, it will get way more likes than a picture, you know, I don't know, with the mayor. Like, it's ridiculous. No, I'm saying because I was with the mayor this week, but like, but yeah, I mean, I'm saying it will, the reason why people are following other people should be because they are admiring them, because they you know, they like what they're doing, they want to follow their steps, they think that their work is worth, you know, all of these things. And I think that, you know, the word influencer, if you really get down to it, I was in Arkansas actually recently. And I got an Uber, and I had never been to Arkansas. And so I got an Uber outside of the airport, and this pickup truck arrived. It was like very Arkansas. Everything was so perfect in my mind. It was like exactly how it should be.
Right.
And so I get in this Uber, and I'm talking to the guy, and I was there for a conference about women in tech and responsible social media. And so he's like, "What are you doing in Arkansas?" And I told him. And he says, "Oh, could you elaborate? Like, what are you going to talk about?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to talk about the responsibility behind social media and, you know, how influencers, blah, blah, blah." And he says, I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, I'm not in that. What is an influencer?"
Mm.
And I saw this as such an opportunity. I was like, oh, like, you know, it's yeah, like, yeah. I was jealous that he didn't know.
Right.
And so, and I said, "Well, let me ask you, what do you think? How would you define an influencer?" "Who in the world is an influencer?" And he said, "Well, you know, like Gandhi, like he started going deep into like all these people that have influenced movements or, and I'm not even saying positive or negative, by the way, you can talk about, you know, Fidel Castro or whatever, like, but my point is, he had the real definition of the word influencer. And so the unfortunate thing is that influencers now, it's not that it's mislabeled, by the way, because they are influencing.
Yeah.
They are influencing in such powerful ways. I mean, my God, imagine if Gandhi would have had access to a tool like social media. I mean, I'm just saying, it is such a big opportunity. However, few of these influencers are taking the responsibility that comes with it. They don't even realize what it means to be an influencer. If you ask them, what do you influence? They have no answer. And I've done it. I've asked a lot of them. And the point is, if you're going to put on the hat of influencer, then please know what you're influencing and know that every single post that you're putting out there is reaching people, vulnerable girls and boys, you know, people that are looking up to you. It is a responsibility. And so when you ask if it's a tool that people see, it is. It is a tool that people see. I just wish it was used with more responsibility behind it. I don't know if that answered your question.
Man, that's some fire. I mean, holy smokes! And because I love that, because I'm within that space, like within a marketing level, I have a marketing company and stuff, and you know the following and people labeling themselves as influencers and things, and like just with my brand personally, I've been doing this for years. I've always been conveying motivational and inspirational messages for my like audience because I enjoy it so much. Like I've been doing it since I've been 13, 14 years old on the camera. And that right there, like I love it. And I've asked people the same question, like, what do you influence? And they're just like, they don't know. They don't know what to say. And a lot of them, you know, they might have like a big ego. They might be just influenced by like the money. And I love how you asked that guy that from Arkansas, the Uber driver.
Because, I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Martin Luther King. The day is coming up. Like, I look and he's one of my biggest inspirations, Martin Luther King. I just, oh my gosh, the march and everything that he had. And you're right. I mean, just think if they did have social media back then, what would have happened and just some of the events that could have occurred. And
that's my point. I mean, it has so much potential and it's a shame that it has to go in a different direction. You know, it's a shame that we're even having to work on reversing the direction it's taken because it could do so good. It could do so much good. I mean, look at, you know, all the fires, all the fun. It's great. Like, word moves around. People start donating. People use their voice. It's great. But it just, there's a lot of work to be done.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. And that's the thing. Like, if you're passionate about something and you love it, and you're somebody that's like, man, I want to be an influencer. I want to be somebody that motivates or inspires or gives people life within a certain field or a certain niche. Like, you can do that.
For example, it's unfortunate that if you ask some a girl, I don't know, a 15-year-old girl, and she says, a lot of them, by the way, say, I want to be an influencer. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an influencer. Okay, what do you think it requires to be an influencer? They will most likely say, professional photographs, you know, fashion, clothes and backgrounds and colors and, you know, the Instagrammable moments. And people will refer more to Instagram than a movement. And that's the thing. Like, look, we haven't seen the full repercussions of social media on an entire generation, but I'm terrified of seeing it. And I hope that, you know, more consciousness is brought to it. I don't think it's a matter of the technology. I think it's a matter of the use.
That's real, definitely. Let me ask you this. It's just popped into my head. Where do you see tech or social media, let's say, in the next 5-10 years? I mean, you have these platforms that are out now, right? The Instagrams, the social, you know, the Twitters and all that. TikTok, of course, is brand new. And people are really surfacing to that. But, you know, what direction, and it can be any kind of way you want to word it or however, but like, where do you really see it going in the next 5, 10 years? Like, do you see it increasing in a positive sense? Maybe it's like a technological answer that you want to give that's just so, you know, captivating in terms of, you know, 2025 or 2030.
I'm going to give the answer that I am hoping for.
Okay.
I hope that social media takes it, you know, that its use is redefined in a way. I don't think that is something that the current platforms will do as companies. I think that it's up to the users to redefine the use. And I really hope that, you know, younger generations that are actually born into social media are more responsible, are more aware of the repercussions of it, are more careful about it, use it for good, use it for, you know, social responsibility. I hope that they turn, I hope that selfies are no longer a thing. I really hope that they use their loud voice, which everyone has now if you have social media,
sure,
to do good and to help the world become a better place. I hope that there's more truth in it more than anything. I think that that's the most important thing. And I mean, I don't think that social, I'm not saying like close your Instagram accounts.
Right.
I'm saying there's a lot of good that can come from it. We just need to understand the responsibility behind it. And once you do that, you know, I use Instagram a lot. Yes. And I use it. I want to believe that I'm as genuine and as true to myself as I possibly can with my Instagram. And, you know, at the same time, I recognize it as a professional tool, not a social one. I connect with a lot of people, sure, but I don't think that, like, you know, please don't ever think that by looking at my Instagram, you know me or you know what I'm going through every day. I mean, look, the better story place is getting, like, the more attention it gets and the more success it gets, the more of a wreck I am emotionally, yeah, because I'm nervous.
Of course.
And those kinds of things I share on story plays, I share, you know, I think that you need to know what each platform is for. I tell people, I'm like, I'm not telling you to switch from story plays, I mean, from Instagram to story plays. I'm just saying, add a layer to your sharing content and let's share some truth as well. And so, yeah, I hope it goes in that direction.
No, I love that, because it's like, you know, story plays is an area where you can, you know, be vulnerable and
be, yeah, you can be real.
I mean, you can still do that on Instagram if you want, but it's
you
like,
can, but it's just not made for it.
Yeah.
It's not made for it. It doesn't work that way. And so when somebody is real and writes a paragraph in their caption, people are like, ooh, they're going through a breakdown.
Right.
It's like
judging even comes, yeah, into play.
And just, so I think it's very difficult for Instagram to reverse that. I just think that we need to take it as it is and know what its good use is for and where it's at, and add layers and share truth on story plays and use Twitter responsibly. And, you know, it's not about like becoming a caveman. It's just, right, it's just about knowing how to use it for, sure, good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Learning how to use it for your benefit and what makes you happy.
Exactly.
That's the main thing, because the mental health aspect is just so important.
I agree.
But Yvonne, I definitely want to be, you know, respectful of your time. You know, where can the audience, the viewers, the listeners find you on social media, and then, you know, links, you know, the app and things, where can they find you and things?
I'm super reachable. Okay. I think on Instagram, it's Yvonne Maria. Just like that. Story Place is My Story Place on Instagram. The app, you can download it on the App Store, on the Google Play Store. It's free. It's easy. Story Place, one word. Story Place Studio is online. It's in case you have a story that you want to turn into a movie. That's where it goes. And my email is Yvonne@storyplace.com. I feel like it's on all my platforms. So I'm really, I mean, I love getting to know people and hearing stories. So please reach out.
Absolutely. And I'll attach all of that in the description below. And before we end, Yvonne, I just wanted to, you know, really quick, give you appreciation for you being who you are. And that's genuine, again, like your realness. And I appreciate that a lot because I'm from the East Coast and I know what that's like, you know? Yeah. And then coming out to in LA, it's completely different, you know? So you being a connector, you being a listener and truly understanding and seeing people for who they are, and then having a platform where people can come and just talk about these things, talk about issues they're going through, things that they're battling in the inside internally. Like that, oh my gosh, like I love that so much. And I commend you significantly for what it is that you're doing, the movement that you have, and just what you've done up to this point. Like it's really inspiring.
Thank you. Likewise. I hope you continue and I hope you share stories and, you know, let's get to know you also on StoryPlace.
No, I'll definitely be downloading the app and getting on there, as well as I'm sure the viewers and the listeners as well. Check out StoryPlace, the app. And before we end, Yvonne, you know, I always have the guest leave, you know, the audience with an execution note, right? So one practical tip, and I know you've covered so much, okay? I know you've covered so much, but
wait, let me think.
One thing that is executionable, you know, maybe it's something that they can go do, you know, something to put on their to-do list for tomorrow. What would that one thing be?
Okay. Go out there this week and get to know someone new.
Mm.
Just hear someone's story, whether it's in a coffee shop, the Uber driver, whatever.
Yeah.
But genuinely listen to someone's story. Mm. I think that that's a good start.
Absolutely. I love it. Yeah. A stranger in public.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's somebody that you haven't even connected with in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just touch base with them. I agree.
For no specific purpose. That's the key point.
Okay. Again, Yvonne, I appreciate you. And
thank
I'll be attaching
you.
Everything in the description below. And yeah, this was fun. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Roots of Success podcast. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. I really appreciate that, as well as a like and a subscribe. Stay connected between shows by following me on Instagram @NateTheGreat. And remember, guys, success starts here. Keep winning. Nate the Great signing off.